With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy. Just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's a special kind of horror reserve for the people who can sit across from you, smile, make you feel safe, while knowing that safety is the illusion they depend on most. That was John Wayne Gacy's talent. Not the clown makeup, not the construction business. It was his ability to pass, to sell the lie so completely that even the people living in his orbit, neighbors, coworkers, political figures, cops, never saw the monster moving in daylight. This isn't a story about how many lives he took. It's a story about how a human brain can build two worlds at once and live in both like nothing's wrong. When you look at Gacy's life, you find a man obsessed with approval and control in equal measure. From the outside, he's a civic success story, contractor, party host, volunteer clown. I think I said that with the wrong vigor on the wrong the wrong profession. A minor political figure, even. The kind of guy who shook hands. Fundraisers. Birthday parties, joked with cops, the bar after work. But underneath that mask sat something else entirely. A psyche built on compartmentalization, so rigid that even he may have believed his own act. Psychologists often talk about cognitive dissonance, that mental tension that happens when your actions and your self-image don't quite line up. Most people feel it when they lie or cheat. It's uncomfortable. It kind of gnaws at you, so you correct course, apologize, rationalize something. But for someone like Gacy, dissonance wasn't a warning system. It was white noise, a sound he'd long since learned to live with. He grew up in a home ruled by humiliation. His father drank, berated him, called him weak. As a boy, he learned that showing emotion meant danger, so he buried it. And that's where it starts. When a kid learns to hide pain, he learns to hide everything else too. He develops compartments. This is where the fear goes. This is where the truth goes. This is where the lie goes. And decades later, those walls are still stacking. When Gacy went to Iowa and got convicted for SA of a teenager, you know, that should have been a wake-up call. A chance for accountability, treatment, supervision. But instead, he got parole. And the world basically handed him a reset button. He came back to Chicago, determined to rebuild his image. And that's when the mask became the whole identity. He ran PDM contractors, joined the JCs, threw massive neighborhood parties. He worked overtime to be one of the good guys. It wasn't just camouflage, it was self-reinforcement. Because for Gacy, being liked wasn't about connection. It was about dominance. The smile, the handshake. Oh, yeah, you know, there are guys. I'm just a helpful neighbor, you know? No, those were all power plays. The illusion of trust gave him cover, but it also fed his ego. He wanted to be admired not just despite what he was doing, but because he could do it and still be admired. That's the psychology of the mask. He didn't feel guilt in the way you or I would define it, and I'm hopefully we're on the same page on that. He felt frustration when the world failed to validate him. He felt rage when someone threatened the illusion. And in those moments, the other side of him, the predator, stepped in. Most of Gacy's victims were young men who trusted him. Teenagers looking for work, runaways, kids who didn't have much power to begin with. They were chosen not just because they were accessible, but because they reinforced the power dynamic that he craved. Every crime began with manipulation, an offer of money, a jab, or a job. A jab. You want a jab? Freudianly kind of put that in there. That was kind of creepy. A place to crash. That's key to understanding the duality here. Gacy didn't see himself as a killer operating outside of society. He saw himself as the center of it. In his head, the victims weren't equals. They were props in his personal drama. The double life only works when you fully dehumanize the people in the shadows of it. That's a concept in forensic psychology called moral disengagement. The mental gymnastics offenders use to shut off empathy. It's not one grand lie. It's a thousand small ones. They wanted to be here. They knew what they were doing. They're not missing. They'll turn up. Every excuse builds a little more insulation between behavior and consequence. By the time the investigators came knocking in 1978, Gacy had constructed an entire psychological architecture to hold his reality together. Think about that crawl space under his house. More than 30 bodies, layer upon layer. That's not physical concealment. That's symbolic. It's a perfect metaphor for how his brain worked. Everything ugly went down there. Everything unacceptable. Every act he couldn't square. With the image upstairs, the laughter, the handshake, the campaign badge, all buried beneath it. Like any system of denial, it started to rot. By the late 70s, Gacy's two worlds were bleeding into each other. Neighbors complained about the smell. Employees whispered about missing kids. Police had run-ins with him that never quite added up. But the mask still held. because his charm is a powerful tool. It buys time. It makes people doubt their instincts. You can hear it in his interviews, even after his arrest, this oily, overconfidence cadence. He thought he could talk his way through anything, you know, invite officers to sit down, offer them coffee, joke around, you know. It's a narcissist's default, control through confidence. But then came one boy he couldn't talk his way around. Robert Peist, 15 years old, missing after telling his mother he was going to talk to a contractor about a job. That contractor? You guessed it. You know, just John. When detectives knocked this time, they didn't leave. They noticed inconsistencies. They got a warrant. They started pulling at threads. And once the facade cracked, everything poured out. Here's the disturbing part. Even as they searched his house, even as bodies were being exhumed, Gacy stayed social. Went out for breakfast with the cops, tailing him. He chatted, he smiled, he joked. Yeah. The bears. It's not just arrogance. It's compartmentalization under stress, a brain so conditioned to separate self from consequence that it keeps performing right up until the performance is impossible. After his confession, Gacy's behavior remained bizarrely detached. He admitted to approximately 30 murders, as if reciting inventory. He called his victims things. He joked about being the best housekeeper in Chicago because he kept everything tidy in the crawl space. That gallows humor isn't just sociopathy. It's an emotional deflection. It's what happens when a mind can't tolerate its own reality. It reframes horror as logistics. At trial, his lawyers leaned into the idea of multiple personalities, one persona doing good, one doing evil. But what psychologists later noted was that the divide wasn't a disorder. It was a strategy. Gacy didn't lose time. He didn't dissociate like a trauma victim might. He switched channels. He chose the persona that best served the moment. When he needed community, he became the clown. When he needed the control, he became the predator. When he needed sympathy, he became the misunderstood man. Haunted, you know, had a bad childhood. I don't want to talk about it, you know. How's your day? How's your day going, you know? That adaptability is why he lasted so long undetected. He read people like mirrors and reflected back exactly what they needed to see. The prosecution called it what it was, calculated manipulation. He planned, he concealed, he lied, he didn't forget his crimes, he buried them literally and psychologically. During his years on death row, journalists who interviewed Gacy described the man who still believed he was smarter than everyone else. He painted landscapes and clowns. He sold them to collectors, gave interviews where he blamed the media, blamed his victims, blamed the cops. Even in total isolation, he was still performing. That's the part people underestimate about narcissistic offenders. They don't need an audience to maintain the act. They just need to believe there is one. He spent his last decade rewriting his own mythology. And that's the true prison of the double life. Once the lie becomes your identity, even facing death doesn't force truth. When Gacy was executed in 1994, the final words he spoke were a vulgar dismissal to everyone watching. No remorse, no reflection, just contempt. That's not bravado. It's defense. Because admitting what he did would mean destroying the only thing that ever mattered to him, the illusion of control. So, what does Gacy teach us, kids? Well, thanks for joining me today on Reading Rainbow. Well, not just about evil, but about the psychology of deception itself. First, that compartmentalization isn't always obvious. It can look like charm, like humor, like helpfulness, you know. Ha! Did you see down at the Piggly Wiggly? Did you see what they had a sale on? Oh my goodness. I know you like the Ivory soap. They got it. They got 4 bars for 50 cents, and I got a coupon here. I got too far into that, didn't I? People who live double lives don't usually act like villains. They act like the friendliest person in the room. Second, that narcissism isn't about vanity. It's about survival. For Gacy, the ego wasn't confidence. It was armor. He needed the world to see him as good because the alternative, seeing himself as a monster, was unthinkable. And third, that communities often help sustain these facades. We crave comfort. We want to believe the smiling neighbor couldn't possibly be capable of such horror. And so we rationalize, just like he did. It's just a weird smell. It's just eccentric. We don't judge. That's how the mask wins. Until someone like Robert Peast disappears and the story forces itself into the light. When you study Gacy's brain, metaphorically speaking, what you see is a masterpiece of denial. He engineered his identity the way some people build cathedrals, layer by layer, with pride and craftsmanship. I know that. I've built several cathedrals, and let me tell you, I'm proud of them. Okay, no. But denial isn't indestructible. It cracks under pressure. It leaks. And once it gives way, it collapses fast. And that collapse, the moment where fantasy and truth collide, is where justice lives. It's also where psychology meets law, because you can't prosecute what you can't prove, and you can't prove what someone's mind has buried unless you understand how it was buried. That's why Gacy's case still matters. It forced investigators, prosecutors, and psychologists to work together, not just to solve crimes, but to decode deception itself. He wasn't the first man to live a double life, and he won't be the last. But he's one of the clearest examples of how narcissism and compartmentalization can fuse into something lethal. The clown suit, the laughter, the parades, those are props. The real performance was happening in his head. A lifelong one-man play about power, pain, and pretending. And in the end, it all came down to one truth the mask could never cover. You can hide the evidence, but you can't bury the mind that made it. Give me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and you will find us. Do the same thing on any podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, whatever it is. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and hit subscribe. We do appreciate that. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again, Wilson.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.